Election season upon us, it's time to once again pose the question, has Idiocracy become a documentary? The 2006 Mike Judge movie, once buried by Fox for being a little too brand critical, has since emerged as a cult classic and go-to reference for expressing societal dismay, especially during elections. There's just something catchy about it. It's not Idiot Land, not Idiotville, it's Idiocracy, a system, an entire social order churning out morons, the perfect term to throw shade at the powers that be. At South by Southwest last year, Terry Crews even revived the character President Dwayne Elizondo Mountain Dew Herbert Camacho to launch a satirical run for the Oval Office in 2024.
The future is
While it's kind of soul-crushing that I'll never see an actual Camacho ticket,
and today I'm about to Mountain Doo-Doo.
I rewatched the film recently, and not only is it still funny, but it is a disturbingly prescient reflection of our current reality. And it's not because nobody knows anything, but because everybody thinks somebody does. Let's dive in. Idiocracy follows Joe Bowers, an average army librarian who gets chosen for a year-long hibernation experiment along with streetwalker Rita. Things don't go as planned, and the pair wake up 500 years later to find themselves in a garbage-filled wasteland where everyone is an imbecile.
I'll base your ass on my fist! In your face, ass!
After an IQ test renders Joe the smartest man alive, he's tasked with solving a famine caused by crops being irrigated with a sports drink called Brondo. When Joe recommends replacing Brondo with water, the economy tanks and Joe is sentenced to a gladiatorial rehabilitation in a monster truck coliseum. With the help of Rita and his lawyer Frito, Joe proves the water is working seconds before his execution. He's pardoned, hailed as a hero, and, realizing he can't return to his time, decides to settle down with Rita and succeed Camacho as president. As the new executive, he calls for the people to embrace smart stuff like books, and eventually, to figure things out for themselves. The end. So, let's just briefly go over the origins of the Idiocracy. According to the film, society slowly devolved because, basically, all of the dumb hillbillies thoughtlessly procreated, while all the smart people abstained to focus instead on their careers, leading to a proliferation of morons. This scenario is actually eerily similar to a cautionary vision of the future described by a contemporary of Freud's, the very problematic thinker Max Nordau. In 1892, Nordau published a book called Degeneration, in which he claimed that certain cultural movements were causing people to abandon rational thought and moral standards, creating an increasingly emotionally driven population. The embrace of these cultures could become pathologies that are then biologically inherited. In Idiocracy, we basically see redneck culture producing people who are so emotionally determined that they succumb to their base impulses and breed recklessly, leading to more who do the same. Importantly, though, the decadent culture Nordau criticized was more modern artists like Edvard Munch and less trailer parks and dudes named Bubba. Nordau's theories were very flawed. There was no scientific basis for degeneration, and his legacy is largely that of a crotchety reactionary who just didn't like change. Idiocracy's dysgenics angle is definitely not what makes the film resonate today. It's more a darkly humorous setup than serious social commentary. However, one of Nordau's symptoms of degeneration was increased superstition. More emotional people means more magical thinking to provide comforting answers to hard questions. Interestingly, we don't see that in Idiocracy. There are no appeals to gods, superstitions, or flying spaghetti monsters. But there is something else that serves as an unquestioned source of knowledge and authority: corporate consumerism. And here is where Idiocracy remains relevant in 2024. The culture of the Idiocracy merges dude bro masculinity, street slang, anti-intellectualism, and pervasive hyper-consumerism that saturates every facet of their society. Joe's lawyer is named Frito, one of the president's middle names is Mountain Dew, the star of Ow My Balls is named Hormel, everything from furniture to clothing is adorned with logos reminiscent of NASCAR, AOL, Time Warner, Taco Bell, and Starbucks have merged with the U.S. government.
Welcome to AOL, Time Warner, Taco Bell, U.S. government, long distance.
And Brondo, the Gatorade-like sports drink, has taken over state institutions and employs half the population. Not only are these companies inescapable, they're the presumed source of knowledge, or through the lens of pioneering psychoanalyst Jacques Lacan, they function as the subject who is supposed to know. For example, when Joe suggests Brando is killing the crops, the Secretary of State iconically says,
"But Brando's got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes."
And then,
"But Brando's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes."
What are electrolytes? Do you even know? It's what they used to make Brando. Yeah, but why did they use them to make Brando?
Because Brando's got electrolytes.
Nobody knows what electrolytes are or why plants may or may not crave them, but they do know how to throw around a brand slogan tautologically. They've outsourced the role of knowing to the Brando Corporation, and this outsourcing of knowledge is crucial to understanding our world today. In Lacanian psychoanalysis, the subject who is supposed to know is related to the concept of the big other, or the invisible network of language, symbols, and cultural norms that shape human subjectivity. The big other is where we find meaning, seek validation, and look for guidance. It can be a religious institution, a political ideology, or a set of social standards. As an aspect of our interactions with the big other, we project onto the subject who is supposed to know the fantasy of complete knowledge and fulfillment. In Lacan's theory, when you see a therapist, you project onto them the expectation that they have the answers to your problems. But this happens elsewhere too. For example, when you call tech support, you assume that the person on the other end has the answers to your tech issues. Now, it may be the case that the tech support person does have the knowledge to fix your computer. That's not the point. The point is, there's a psychological necessity to project the illusion of knowing onto someone or some entity because it relieves us of the anxiety of living with that lack, that gap of knowledge, that thing we're missing. The idea that there's someone or something out there who has what we're missing is a comforting, necessary illusion. Idiocracy exaggerates this psychological reliance to an absurd degree. Since everyone is an idiot, people entirely outsource their understanding of the world. There's the electrolytes example, but also the medical system. When Joe seeks help after waking up, a nurse blankly attempts to match his symptoms with crudely symbolized buttons. The machine is devoid of human insight, yet is trusted implicitly. Later, Joe is analyzed by a Healthmaster Inferno brought to you by Jormy Technologies, a Jiffy Lube-esque diagnostic machine operated by a tragically ignorant technician.
This one goes in your mouth.
Here, knowledge has been completely outsourced to the techno-corporate apparatus. Or consider the legal system, where trials are won not with evidence, but with machismo and profanity. Whoever is able to best align themselves with the cultural authorities like the masterpiece Ow My Balls,
and he interrupted me while I was watching Ow My Balls,
aren't only viewed as authentic, but presumed to hold knowledge. The barcode on their wrists is the ultimate example of their submission to the amalgamation of corporate interests that they rely on. What's unsettling is, although less overt, we share a disturbingly similar relationship to consumerism as the idiocrats. Building off Lacan, philosopher Slavoj Žižek argues that commodities and brands have become the ultimate subject who is supposed to know in our society. They not only stimulate desire, but position themselves as the ones who hold the knowledge to fulfill it. The biggest opportunity for those selling something, whether it's a corporation peddling a product or an influencer marketing their persona, is to offer a temporary alleviation of the ever-present anxieties about belonging, status, and the fear of missing out. So for example, a luxury car commercial isn't just advertising a means of transportation, but a whole system of meaning, an authoritative reference point that we can point to as evidence of our self-worth. Rather than cultivating self-confidence, it's much easier to adorn yourself with a commodity that asserts self-worth for you. Commodities then play the role of the therapist in Lacan's original formulation. Advertising invites us to project onto the product the knowledge and authority needed to fill our sense of lack. Let's talk a little more about influencers, who often showcase enviable lifestyles and how to achieve them. Whether it's beauty influencers promising the key to hotness, health influencers promising the key to wellness, or philosophy YouTubers promising access to the truth, influencers compete in a rat race to become the best subject who is supposed to know. You've probably been in a situation where you're arguing with someone online, and instead of responding to your point, your opponent just links to a video essay, so the influencer essentially makes their point for them. It's a lot easier to defer to a perceived authority than own up to the limits of our understanding. As such, influencers become symbolic placeholders, convenient sources of authority and expertise who effectively think for us. The corporations selling you products, the platforms you're watching this video on, are in a race to coddle us. The more we rely on them to quell daily anxieties of knowledge, identity, and fulfillment, the more money they make. The extreme end of this logic is Idiocracy, where responsibility has been so completely outsourced to commercial forces that a sports drink owns half the economy, Costco gives out law degrees.
I went to law school here.
Costco?
And Carl's Jr. assumes guardianship of underprivileged children.
Your children will be placed in the custody of Carl's Jr.
The subject who is supposed to know also influences the cultural and political landscape, and Idiocracy humorously exaggerates this, portraying a society where proper diction is scorned, while slang derived from entertainment culture becomes a marker of credibility. It's not so different from corporate buzzwords. When you use terms like synergize, inflection point, or leveraging core competencies, you're not communicating meaning so much as pointing to corporate culture as such for an automatic validation of knowledge. Same thing with culture war buzzwords. Zizek argues that political polarization often relies on projecting the subject who is supposed to know onto your side. So when using terms like deep state or colonizer, there's often an implicit claim that your perspective is backed by an authoritative, knowledgeable entity, whether it's a historian, a thinker, a political insider, a professor, etc. It's flexing reference to authority more than making a cogent argument. This dynamic becomes particularly scary in our hyper-connected age where ads are virtually everywhere and information flows endlessly. When we're commanded to desire so many things and expected to form opinions on so many events, the appeal of someone or something that cuts through the noise and provides answers becomes increasingly potent, giving a unique appeal to populist leaders. Populists present themselves as simple, relatable figures who understand the real people's problems and have easy answers to complex issues. They are the embodiment of the subject who is supposed to know. They offer an escape from uncertainty and a sense of control amidst a changing world. President Dwayne Elizondo Mountain Dew Herbert Camacho is exactly that, a former wrestler with no real platform, but he captivates the masses with bravado and empty promises. He doesn't offer solutions, but he convincingly represents them, functioning as a convenient placeholder for answers. Because, in some way, we actually don't want the answers. We prefer the entertaining placeholder that someone like Camacho offers. For Lacan, one of the goals of psychoanalysis is for the illusion of the therapist's superior knowledge to eventually go away, because you've learned everything they have to teach you. You realize that the person you imbued with supposed knowledge is just as flawed as you are. But Zizek says that often we don't really want this. There's a perverse enjoyment in remaining ignorant so we can blame our lack of fulfillment on external forces rather than taking responsibility for our agency. We cling to a state of infantilization because it's easier to outsource responsibility for our problems than to face them. We'd much prefer our leaders and corporations to coddle us.
Welcome to Costco. I love you.
Now, obviously, the comfort of unknowing doesn't mean much when people are starving, so when Camacho is faced with famine, he posits Joe, or not sure, as he is later called, as the new subject who is supposed to know.
We got this guy not sure. He's gonna fix everything.
So they outsource knowledge to him, and despite some minor hiccups involving a man named Beef Supreme, Joe's plan works, and the people are saved. A core aspect of Lacanian theory is to recognize the illusory nature of the subject who is supposed to know. Nobody has all the answers. It's up to us to find social and individual autonomy, and that's exactly what Joe tells the people.
We still got all these problems. Look, you know, you're just gonna have to solve them yourselves.
How?
Well, you know, think about it, you know, you're just gonna have to figure it out, you know, like we did with the crops.
In the shooting script, Joe even says, think about things. If you don't, who will? Like Joe, Zizek would argue the very search for a leader or an entity who has all the answers is misguided. True change happens when we reject these illusions, recognize our role in creating a system, and assume responsibility. And while we may pride ourselves on being more cynical and less gullible than the characters in Idiocracy, the truth is a bit more complicated. For Žižek, our cynicism masks a deeper reliance on the subject who's supposed to know. We may seem skeptical about authority, but secretly still search for subjects to whom we can outsource knowledge. We may outwardly scoff at traditional authorities like priests and politicians, but we quickly replace them with new figures. We turn to influencers to inform our opinions, consume media narratives that shape our desires, and trust the success stories of social media entrepreneurs. Even as we criticize the news, the commercials that interrupt it set the standards against which we measure our self-worth. A thirst for external answers is not something we can tame. Lacan's whole shtick is that this lack can never be fully satisfied, but acknowledging this unfillable gap doesn't mean we resign ourselves to passivity and distrust all systems. The real challenge is to transform this impulse into a more active, questioning engagement with the world. It's about recognizing the limitations of any single authority, about digging deeper to honestly grasp the influences shaping our lives, asking difficult questions, and being okay with unsatisfying answers. Sure, this requires effort, and in an age of information overload, staying discerning is exhausting. It's tempting to surrender to the comfort of one of the many influences competing to indulge your pathologies. But if you don't want to find yourself one day sitting in a kangaroo court next to a lawyer named Frito who got his degree from Costco, it's something we gotta do. Hey, thanks for watching. Don't forget to check out my Ko-fi page if you want to support the channel and help it continue. Thanks to all of you who have donated recently. It is much appreciated. Subscribe to the channel for more content. Be sure to check me out on Letterboxd where you can track all the movies I watch. Hit me up on Twitch where I'll be playing the new Elden Ring DLC soon. Join the Discord. All those links are in the description, so be sure to click them all. Hope you all have a great summer, and thanks for watching, y'all. Peace.